Thank you, Grady. Thank you, church. We are blessed today to have with us, as Justin mentioned just a few moments ago, Clint Mitchell. Clint is the head of school at Mobile Christian School, and he is a great man of God. There's some things about Clint that so many admire, but personally I admire greatly. First of all, he has a love for his family. He is married to Brittany Sargent Mitchell, and they have two children and one on the way. They have Lincoln and Landon, and a baby that's going to be born, baby boy that's going to be born this month. And so just maybe not today, Clint, during your sermon. That would be great. But anyhow, so please pray for them. And Clint loves his family, and that is apparent, and he shows children what it's like to be a father, to be a husband through Mobile Christian School, and I admire that about him. Clint also has a love for Christian education. Clint is a graduate of Alabama Christian Academy in Montgomery, Alabama, and there he went to Faulkner University, and that's where he and Brittany met one another, and from there he moved back down here to teach at Mobile Christian. Clint has been with Mobile Christian 10 years, I believe, and for 2 years now, he's been the head of school. He was in administration and went straight into being the head of school, and he's doing a great job over there, and you can see his love for Christian education. It goes deep in his roots. And then finally, I want to tell you that Clint has a love for watching young people surrender their lives to Jesus Christ, and not just young people, but all people, but especially through Mobile Christian. You see, Clint is the son of a preacher, Ross Mitchell, and he's married into a preaching family with David Sargent. And so ministry has been a big part of his life forever. And so he uses his position at Mobile Christian School the right way. That right way is to tell kids about Jesus, to show kids in a Christian education, in a Christian atmosphere, the love of Jesus Christ. And Clint is doing a great job. I do urge you to pray for Clint. Pray for the school. Pray for opportunities for parents to bring children to Mobile Christian. And, of course, we want to fill it up with Christian families. But if they come there and they do not know Jesus Christ, that they will leave there knowing Jesus Christ. Clint's got a great lesson prepared for us. I love him. I appreciate him. And so please give your attention to Mr. Clint Mitchell.
I appreciate that, Terry. And good morning to all of our brothers and sisters here at Azalea City. I got to start this morning with a confession a little bit. As I was getting ready, Terry mentioned I've got a background as a preacher's kid. I've got a background as a preacher's kid in law, I guess. So I've been to a lot of different churches. I've seen things done in a lot of different ways. So I had to kind of figure out before I came and started speaking with you this morning how things go. I didn't want to go too long, didn't want to go too short, got to make sure the order was right. So I asked Justin, who I was corresponding with, I said, how long does Terry usually go on Sunday mornings? He said, Clint, honestly, he goes about 45 minutes usually. First of all, keep bringing the word, brother. That's awesome. Okay? That's awesome. It does create a little bit of conflict for me, okay, because I am a member over at Creekwood. What that means is if I'm not in a booth at San Miguel by about 11:15, my skin starts to get a little itchy. Okay, so I'm going to try to power through that this morning because we're at 11:23 already. So I'm getting the queso hot flashes a little bit, but we're going to try to work through it a little bit this morning to make sure we get something accomplished here. Hopefully something will be said that can stay with you for a little while. As Terry mentioned, my name's Clint Mitchell. I serve as the head of school at Mobile Christian School. Back in the year 2012, I sent a message to a girl that I thought was kind of cute on the campus of Faulkner University, the way all brave men do. They always send that message first, right? But my end was that I was an education major. I was a math education major and knew that this young lady had gone to school down here in Mobile and had some affiliation with, Christian education as well. So that was kind of my lead in to that conversation. And sure enough, over the next 12 years, that message turned into several more messages, turned into a relationship, turned into a marriage. Now we've got two kids, as Terry mentioned, Lincoln, who just turned 7, Landon, who just turned 4, And then we're about to have another baby, Lord willing, here sometime in the next couple of days. If you see me dash out of here, it means I got the bat signal from the back. So we'll just go ahead and we'll go invitation real quick and we'll try to get it done with. But again, I'm very pleased to be here with you this morning. As I mentioned, Mobile Christian has been a huge part of my life already. It's what brought me down to Mobile. It's kind of the beginning of my relationship with my wife now. And as I look throughout the audience this morning, I see so many different people who have contributed significantly to Mobile Christian School getting to the place that it is today. There are students here, there are teachers here, there are parents and grandparents, there are longtime friends of the school, coaches, there are board members. So first of all, I just want to say thank you on behalf of Mobile Christian School. Thank you all so much for, again, what you've done to help make sure that we've gotten to the point that we're at today. Ultimately, if you don't know, I hope that you do, but if you don't, Mobile Christian is the K-3 through 12 Christian school here in Mobile that's affiliated with the Churches of Christ. And I'm here to tell you, as the head of school, our mission is to bring students into a relationship or into a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ through the things that we do on campus every day. We're certainly not perfect, but at the same time, that is what we want to do. And we're one of the only schools in the area still that has daily Bible classes, daily chapel, because that is our priority. And as long as I'm alive, it's going to continue to be our priority. What I want you to know is this. If you don't know about the school, I'd love to have the opportunity to talk with you at some point. I'll stick around a little bit after services this morning if you want to hang out and talk a little bit, or you're welcome to come by campus and visit at some point if you want to, because I feel strongly that we have a lot of really good things going at Mobile Christian. We do covet your support, Terry said, and again, so many of you have supported in so many different ways already, but we covet your continued prayers. We covet your continued support, whether that's time, that's effort, whatever it may look like. We covet your students. If you have a student in those age ranges, we'd love for them to be a part of what we're doing at Mobile Christian School. And I could go on and on about Mobile Christian. I spend a lot of time up there, obviously. My wife works there. Both of my kids go to school there. I've debated whether or not I need to just put a bed up there on campus, probably. I don't know if that would be in my family's best interest, but it's a big part of our lives. I do, however, try to have a personal life as much as I possibly can as well. For some of you that know me, or for some of you that have heard me speak before, one of the hobbies that I enjoy is I really enjoy watching movies. I don't know if you're a movie fan or not, but I really like being able to escape and watch a movie for a little while, if at all possible. And I really love, even further than that, I love going to the movie theater. And we're in kind of a good time for movies right now. The summer seems to be where a lot of writers and producers and directors will wait to put out their blockbuster hits, if you will, during this time of year where things are more available for students and for people to be able to go see these movies. I remember as a kid going to several what were called midnight premieres of movies. I don't know if that's a thing anymore. If not, as a parent, it kind of terrifies me now, the idea of dropping my kid off at the movie theater at midnight to watch a movie. So I don't know if that's still a thing or not. But went to several of those. And I remember one particular that stuck out to me is I had some friends from school while I was in high school say, Clint, you need to come and check out this new movie. It's a new movie that's a part of a bigger series where there's been lots of movies. I had not seen all the prior movies. I didn't really know much about it. But they invited me to this midnight premiere of this movie. So I said, okay, of course, I'll go with you. So I remember getting to the movie theater, and I remember stepping out of the car. The first thing I saw was all these people who were dressed up in, like, robes and had makeup and these, like, light-up swords that they were playing with in front of the box office and things like that. And I was like, what in the world have I gotten myself into? You probably figured it out. I was at one of the premieres for the second trilogy of Star Wars. Okay, I had not watched any Star Wars movies prior to that, so that was my first experience. Another confession for you. I didn't hate it. I thought it was a decent movie, and what that kind of spurred me to do was I went with my friends from there and watched some of the original movies. Went back and watched them over the next several weeks, months, years, whatever, just kind of get caught up. The thing that's kind of cool about series of movies like that is you can really follow character development. So as I was watching all these different movies, one character that kind of stuck out to me especially in the first series of movies was this guy, okay? Han Solo. Usually, if you're a Star Wars person, you either love or hate this guy, okay? But what was neat was kind of, again, watching the character arc of where things started to where things ended with him. And another thing that's kind of unique about the Star Wars films in general is that, you know, the original movies came out, I'll call it several years ago for those of us that may have been alive during the original trilogy's release date, okay? And they've even continued to make new movies as they've over the last several years. So this was Han Solo kind of at the beginning. Again, portrayed by Harrison Ford, who did a great job with this. Again, it's one of those characters that when you start off, you probably don't like him very much and then hopefully grow to like him or love him over the next several movies. But by the end of the series, this is kind of what he looked like. This is the last movie that he was in. That's Grandpa Han Solo at that point, pretty much, right? So Harrison Ford, again, was the same character. And again, this is the last time that we see Han Solo in this series of movies. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but I did just say it's the last time you see him. I'll just recommend this. If you hadn't seen it, stay off of bridges with angry kids with lightsabers. It's not a good situation probably to be there, okay? But I remember watching that movie and seeing that happen to Han Solo, one of my favorite characters, and being like, no, how could they do this to somebody who I've grown to really like and appreciate? Like, he was such an instrumental part of so many people enjoying that movie. And then in a ironically, interestingly timed release of a new movie and the way only Disney can do it, came this movie right after that, okay? A movie that was dedicated to Han Solo. But you'll notice Harrison Ford was Grandpa Harrison Ford at this time, right? So he can't go back and be young Harrison Ford. So he had to hand off the role of Han Solo to this other guy. And I couldn't tell you who this actor is. That's probably my fault. The movie was okay, though. It was a decent handoff, right? It's not the only time Harrison Ford has had to make a handoff, though. There's another famous character that Harrison Ford portrayed for a while you may be familiar with. Any Indiana Jones fans in here? I don't know if you've seen these movies or not. But again, a long-time series that Harrison Ford, again, when you think of Indiana Jones, you probably think of Harrison Ford, right? But similar type of situation. The movies continued to go on for quite a while. And it seems like in one of the last movies, they were going to try to make a handoff maybe to this guy. And I don't know if that handoff went quite as well. So that was probably an example of maybe a not good handoff. I don't know if you have young kids or not, or if you've got grandkids or something along those lines. Another handoff I was not a fan of, I thought it was not a great handoff, was the Blippi handoff. I don't know how much you've watched Blippi. I thought Blippi was probably a thing until I had kids and found out that it was a person. I'm going to be honest with you. OG Blippi I was down with, but the new Blippi not so much, okay? So that's kind of a handoff, again, I feel like didn't go super well. When I was a kid, getting older, and probably my sister was more into it. Another handoff that I remember seeing happen in TV show was the Blue's Clues handoff. This was one that probably messed with my psyche a little bit. If I messed up, this may be part of the reason why, right? Because we had Steve that was part of our childhood for so long and then passed it off to this other guy. Again, I didn't really follow it after that. I'm sure he did a great job. But in movies and TV shows, you see that happen a lot, right? Maybe it is one actor who has to hand off the role to another actor for one reason or another. Maybe it is a character that has to hand off responsibilities within a movie or within a movie series. They have to hand it off to somebody else. I got a coaching background, so what I think of when I think of handoffs is I think of track and field. It's kind of funny how I got into track and field in the first place. My high school track and field coach was also my football coach. I was a football and basketball guy for most of my life. And I remember my football coach coming to me after football season saying, Clint, I want you to do track. And I thought I was clever. I was going to find a way out of it. I said, sure, coach, I'll do track, but I'm not running. He said, Clint, that's perfect because you're not fast. So let's just have you throw javelin and we'll call that a deal. So I ended up doing track. And shortly after that, made an impact on me. I started actually my first varsity head coaching job was as a track and field coach at the ripe old age of almost 19, which I don't recommend. As a head of school now, that terrifies me. I was 18 years old. I was a head track and field coach at a school there in Montgomery. And I remember specifically, learning a lot about the team aspect of track. A lot of times you think about track, there's a lot of individual events. But obviously teams can accumulate points and things like that. And there's also obviously the relay races, right, that are a team aspect. A relay race like, for example, the 4x100-meter relay has four athletes that are going to participate in that, okay, where basically you'll hear the starting gun. The first athlete's going to take off, and they're going to run as fast and as hard as they can for 100 meters. When they get to that mark, there's going to be another athlete there waiting on them, where they've got to pass, they've got to hand off, they've got to pass the baton to the next athlete who's going to do the same thing. They're going to run as fast and as hard as they possibly can for 100 meters, repeat that process, and again, by the time four of them have done that, they completed the 4x100. So I remember specifically one track meet where we were getting ready for the 4x100 relay. And I remember being out there. We had our kids doing kind of our practice for that. And it looked a little bit different. And the only way I can really hope to show you this, I guess, is we're going to use a visual example this morning. And Justin, you kind of helped rope me into this. Would you mind coming and helping me out a little bit this morning? All right. So I came prepared. So let's stand over here. We're going to face this way. Okay, we're not going to actually run anywhere because we're going to run out of room pretty quickly here, but I hope you stretched before this morning. So what we're going to do is kind of run in place right here, okay? And we're going to go on the count of three here. I'm going to say reach, and when I say reach, I want you to extend your right arm back where you're able to receive the baton, okay? So we'll go one, two, three, reach. Perfect, just like that, okay? So when we were getting ready for the 4x100 relay, we had our athletes doing this repeatedly. One, two, three, reach. One, two, three, reach. Reach over and over again. Thank you. I'm going to call you back here in a second probably. Just like that. Well, again, I was a young coach, but I saw one of the dads of one of our relay runners up at the top of the stands, and his face was, he's looking at like, what are we doing? What's going on here? And I could see him mouthing questions to his kid. And sure enough, I'm young, so I think he thought he was going to help me. So he works his way down from the stands onto the infield. He's like, Coach, hey, how you doing? I said, hey, how are you? He said, I'm so-and-so's dad. Pleasure to meet you. Hey, what are we doing right here? I said, well, we're getting ready for the 4x100. He said, yeah, but your kids, they're not running. I said, no, you're right. They're warm. They're ready to go. He said, well, don't they have to run in this 4x100 relay? I said, yeah, they do. He said, well, then why do you have them doing that over and over? Because for 10 or 15 minutes, we kept doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I had to tell him, I said, it's because we don't lose the 4x100 meter relay. We don't lose it because of the running. We lose it when that happens. That's how we lose, is whenever we drop the baton, right? And what I want to talk about this morning is I want to have a little bit of an illustration from the Old Testament where there was an attempted handoff. And really what I talk about this today is going to be in relation to this. This morning this baton is going to represent something for us. It's going to represent our faith. It's going to represent our relationship with Jesus Christ. And I want to look at a story from the Old Testament with two men named Elijah and Elisha, where they experienced the time that they had to make a handoff, similar to maybe what we've seen in some movies, maybe what we've seen in some of these TV shows, and hopefully similar to what we're doing as Christians each and every day. So if you've got your Bible with you, we're going to be based in 1 Kings chapter 19 this morning. 1 Kings chapter 19. So, I dropped the baton right there. Obviously, that's a mistake, right? And the key part of this is obviously if you're going to have a successful handoff, you've got to have two people who are ready to make it work effectively, right? You've got to have somebody who's extending the baton, somebody who's getting ready to hand it off, somebody who's ready to receive the baton. This morning, again, we're going to talk about Elijah, just a little bit about Elijah real quick. In my opinion, reading through most of the stories about Elijah, he's primarily a rock star for a lot of the scripture that we see about him. He's there for some big moments. He has some awesome moments in relation to preaching and some of the stuff he says, some of the stuff he gets to see and witness. He has these awesome moments. Then we get to about 1 Kings chapter 19, and he has this moment of like serious depression, which is not ideal, right? But he's going through this, and God has all these big things. There's big storms, and there's fire, and all sorts of type of stuff. And then you may remember the story is that God tells him he's there in what? The still and the quiet whisper. So God, through that story, is kind of reminding Elijah, like, you're my prophet, you're my guy, you have this. You've got the baton right now, Elijah. He's reminding him of that. But then we get to the point towards the end of that passage, and basically what he says to Elijah is that you have the baton, but you can't keep it. You're going to have to pass it on. Church, what I wonder sometimes is if we do that same type of thing with our faith, that we have a tendency to want to hold on to our faith, to keep it tight, maybe to put it on a pedestal somewhere and keep it there, and we pull it out when we want it, right? We may say things like, you know, I go to church on Sundays, or when I'm in my car, my radio's turned to K-Love, but I'm keeping it over here, and it's not really something that I'm taking, it's not something that I'm seeking to pass on to everybody else. And what I want to illustrate to you this morning, or make sure that we're aware of, and I'm sure you are, is that all that Satan wants to do is he wants to keep successful handoffs from happening. Satan wants to make sure that either A, we keep it, or that we're not identifying people who we can find and make successful handoffs to, because he hates this process. I think Satan believes that if he's able to stop handoffs from happening, that he can ultimately quiet the power of the gospel. He can quiet the church by making sure that it dies out with those of us that have the baton right now. So we're going to talk about this morning. And again, we're in 1 Kings chapter 19. We're going to look at the text in verse 19 to get started this morning, hopefully. There it is. All right, 1 Kings 19, verse 19. So he being Elijah, departed from there and found Elisha the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him, and he was with the 12. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him. So, tell you what, we did one example to hand off. Justin, do you mind coming back up here? And can you find two other people who are willing to help for me as well? We got 4 by 1. We got to have 4 people here. So basically, here's what happened, right? God says he's got to pass this on to somebody else, right? And what happens is Elijah goes up to Elisha, and by putting his coat around him, what is he saying? He's saying, I am passing this baton. I'm moving it over to you, right? All right, guys, y'all come over here. Come over here. So, Justin, we're going to put you in the back here. You'll be closest to me because we practiced already. So you guys saw what just happened, right? Justin did an excellent job of demonstrating everything, right? So we're going to do the same thing. We're going to see if we can make it from the back all the way to the front here. Just work on our handoffs, okay? Y'all ready? This looks like a dynamic 4x100-meter relay team. I'm telling you. We're ready to go compete in the state championships here. Okay, all right, here we go. I'm going to count us out here. Ready? All right, we're running in place. We're 1, 2, 3, reach. Good. 1, 2, 3, reach. 1, 2, 3, reach. Awesome. I planned for a lot more time during this in my lesson notes because I didn't know how many attempts it was going to take us to be successful, but you guys crushed it. That was awesome. Y'all stay up here. Yeah, just exactly. Stay up here for just a second for me if you don't mind. Justin, I got a question for you. Who was somebody that was instrumental in your life in becoming a Christian? Your parents. So in some way, maybe explain that for me. Why do you feel like your parents were instrumental in you becoming a Christian? That's awesome. So in some ways in your life, what you're saying is that this has already happened for you, right? Now you served as a youth minister here for a long time as well. How many years were you the youth minister at Azalea City? 9 total years. That's incredible. So as you have heard from your parents, in some ways, that is actively happening or has happened as well, right? And that's what this is all about. It's this process of making sure that this baton gets passed to everybody that we possibly can. Okay, guys, y'all can go sit down for just a second. I may call you back in just a second again. Thank you. Now remember, Satan hates that whole entire process, right? He wants to actively stop it at all costs. So this morning what I want to talk about, we had 4 people here for our 4x1, right? So we're going to talk about 4 different principles or 4 truths that I hope that you're going to be able to take with you today and remember so that you can have successful handoffs in your life, so that you can make sure that when you're passing the baton, you're passing with purpose, that it's effective and that it's efficient. Let's start with principle number 1. First thing, if we're going to have successful handoffs, we've got to take the next right step and we've got to keep our head up. Here's what I mean by that. In my life, I have not had many people approach me and ask for my baton spontaneously. I have not had somebody come to me, hey, Clint, I don't really know you, but I heard you're a Christian. Will you baptize me today? That's not usually how the process has worked for me. Now, it may happen before. There may be some times where the Spirit's moving and all of a sudden it works like that. I'm just saying, personally, I have not had that type of experience, right? So rather, we have to make sure we continue to move forward, first of all. Okay? We can't stay still with this. We've got to keep taking the next right step. So that includes moving, right? But the next right step is also very important in this. It can't just be the next step. It has to be the next right step. See, when we're talking about track, you have what are called lanes, right? You have boundaries that you have to stay within. And God does something similar for us. And when we stray from those lanes, we impact the ability to have an effective handoff, right? So I have to run the next right step. I have to be faithful in my own life. I have to make sure that what I've got, that what I am is real, that it's genuine, that my witness of Jesus Christ is honest and truthful. Can I say this? It is a terrible thing when we try to extend maybe the gospel of Jesus Christ, and somebody comes to our church and then all they hear is gossip. It is a counterproductive thing for us when we try to extend the words of the apostles, the words of Paul, the words maybe of even Jesus Christ Himself. But when they hear us talk, they don't believe there's any way that we can believe what we're selling. Trying to be disingenuous, trying to be not real, being fake is not going to work. It's like trying to play hide and seek with God, right? Ask Adam and Eve how that went. It was a quick game, right? We cannot fake this. It doesn't matter what you feel like. You feel like you need to tuck in or disguise or hide. God does not want any of that. What God wants is our heart. He wants the genuine, honest completeness of us. Because again, if we try to be fake, if we try to be more concerned about what people think about us or what we're doing, I guarantee you, it's not going to be successful. I guarantee you it's not going to be successful. So we have to be genuine. We have to be real. A part of this is realizing it's not really a flashy process taking the next right step. When we look at Elijah, a lot of the text before what we're getting into today, I'd encourage you to go back and read it. Check out the story of Elijah. And it's stories of God telling Elijah to do this, or to go there, or to go here, and to do that. And by and large, for the most part, what Elijah does is says, yes, God, okay, God, yes, God. And that's ultimately what our responsibility is as well. God tells us, honor your father and mother. So we do that. He tells us to practice forgiveness. So we do that. He tells us to be honest, to be true. So we do that. And with each step, with each small decision, we take the next right step forward. That's not enough. Taking the next right step is important. But if we're going to make successful handoffs, we've also got to make sure that our head is up. In track, sometimes you may think about the guy, again, or the girl who's running full steam ahead and their head's down and their head's down, but they not realize somebody's in front of them. And that's not a good situation either, right? So we've got to keep our head up and we've got to be looking for who we're going to extend that baton to. We've got to be looking for who we're looking to share that wonderful message of Jesus Christ with. So first of all, we've got to take the next right step and we've got to keep our head up. We've got to be actively looking for who we can share that with. Watch what happens in the next verse here. This is 1 Kings 19, verse 20 now. So, Elisha left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you. Seems like a pretty natural request to me, right? Before I go with you, I want to have the opportunity to go say goodbye to my parents. Again, does not seem like it should be super problematic. Here's maybe the issue. I bring a bottle of water with me when I speak now. Justin, I need you again, brother. I apologize. I don't really apologize, but I do appreciate your help. Learn to have one when I speak, just in case. I'm going to ask you to come over here again. Will you put this in your right hand for me? Okay, perfect. We're going to practice one more time, same way we have a couple times so far. So we're going to face this way. Yeah, just keep that in your right hand for me. Perfect. And what we're going to do is the same thing. So we're going to run one, two, three, and reach. You feel like you can grab that? Not well, maybe? Okay. Some of you kind of figured out what was going on. Thanks, Justin. You kind of figured out what was going on there before we maybe even did that. You see, here's what happens with Elisha, right? He says, basically, let me go back and hang out with my family, which seems like a natural response. But here's the thing. When we're trying to make a successful exchange, if you're going to be on this side of it, if you're going to receive the baton that is Jesus Christ, if you're going to have that type of relationship, we have to have empty hands. We have to have empty hands. So Elisha has this tough decision to make, right? And I don't know if you, again, identified the problem or not. It's not necessarily about his parents, right? It's about Elijah's telling him to come with him, and he says, I want to go back. Did you notice what Elijah said to him? Elijah says, go back again. What have I done to you? Why? I'm not keeping you from doing what you need to do, right? But notice what Elisha does here. And before we get into that, I think it's kind of funny. It's interesting, I should say, that some similar verbiage is used by Jesus in the New Testament as well. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus says something along the lines of basically, if you choose to go back, then you may not be cut out for this life. You may not be ready to be a follower of mine if you feel like you need to go back. And this is tough. This is a tough process for us because what this means is, and some of us may have experienced this already, where we've had tough decisions to make about what our priorities are going to be. I encourage you to question, to ask yourself, what is it this morning that you need to let go of so that you can fully and effectively receive Jesus Christ? Let's notice what Elisha does here. So he returned from following him and took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen and gave it to the people and they ate. Then he arose and went after Elijah and assisted him. Here's what Elisha figures out. Somewhere along the way of him asking Elijah if he can go back and the time he gets back, he realizes that he's got to set his priorities. And what does he do? He doesn't just turn around and go back with Elijah. He doesn't just say, listen, I'm done with this. He slaughters the oxen that he was working with. He takes the yokes and the tools of his trade and he sets them on fire and cooks these oxen with it. He is not just going back and making a different decision. He's not just saying, I'm going with Elijah. He is absolutely blowing up the bridge to his previous life. He says, I'm looking forward and I'm not going to ever take a step back. Here's the thing. What is it for you that's keeping you from getting a firm grip on Him? It's got to be just an incredibly difficult process to have to say something maybe in one group of people and talk in a completely different way with another. When you have to act a certain way when you're in one setting, and then you're acting in a different way with a different group of people. When you have to transform yourself depending on the time of day, depending on the situation, that's got to be exhausting. And I think people around us look at that process and they laugh at us and they say, you've got to be kidding. If you think I'm going to buy this when it's not evident that it really matters that much in your own life. Now, that's a lot about this side of it. Right? But before we extend that baton, before we try to make a successful handoff, we've also got to be honest enough with that person to tell them, hey, listen, Jesus wants to be the Lord of your life. And if you're not willing to make Him Lord, then Jesus is not really going to be in your life. Jesus is not going to be the third, fourth, fifth, or sixth priority. He wants to be on the throne of your heart. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, right? And again, that's basically what Elijah does. He says to Elisha, you don't have to do this, right? But again, Elisha catches that vision, and he never regrets burning the yoke. He never regrets slaughtering the oxen. Again, I encourage you to think about, what is that for you? What is it that you just need to cut off this morning? That habit, that relationship, that place. I promise you that if you will just cut it off, that this is worth it. This is worth it forever. So, that was point two. Principle number three. I want to encourage you to hold out the baton with faith. I work with teenagers. And as we talk about this, basically, this idea of, you know, we want to pass on our faith. We want to make sure that we're having successful handoffs. We want to talk to other people about Jesus Christ. Do you know what the two most frequent responses are of young people why they cannot do that? Number one is that they will say they don't know enough. Okay? Number two is they will say that they don't think they're good enough. And I often wonder if some of those same obstacles that we experience as young people carry with us maybe into adulthood. I don't know where you are today. I don't know if you have experienced that maybe in your own thought processes of why we struggle sometimes maybe to keep our head up and try to make that handoff. because maybe we don't know or we're not good enough. But here's the good news for you this morning, is that this whole process is not about how good or how smart you are. Ultimately, what this process is about how wonderful Jesus Christ is. This is about the gospel. It's not about our goodness. It's not about saying, hey, I've got this thing or I've got this person you can go talk to or anything along those lines. It's about making sure that we understand that the power of Christ does not limit this from being successful. That when we hold out that baton with faith, not of faith, this may represent faith. We don't just hold it out, but we hold it out with the note, with the knowledge and the understanding that God can work in ways oftentimes that we cannot. That if it's going to be successful, it requires the work, it requires the efforts, again, of God. So number three, I would encourage you again to hold out that baton with faith. Truth number four that I hope we will remember. We've got to remember that nobody runs this race alone. Praise God for that, am I right? Justin asked you a second ago, you've been serving as Zoe said for how long? He said, 9 years. That's awesome. Yeah, come back up here, guys, for me real quick. All three of you, if you don't mind. Justin, this time I'll get you to stand right here in the middle. Bo, you can stand on this side. Harrison, you can stand on this side. Okay? And what I want you to do is I want you to put your arms around these guys. We're going to face this way. Sorry, I'm changing it up on you. I want you to put your arms around these guys. So for just a second, I want all of you to think about, not talk about, just think about maybe a lot of the great times that you've had in the youth group over the last several years. Maybe it was retreats. Maybe it was Bible classes. Maybe it was times where you were just hanging out. Times that were maybe filled with laughter. Times that were maybe filled with impact on our hearts. How does that happen? It happens because we work at this together. It happens because we're a family, because we're united, because, again, we run this race collectively with each other. Now, guys, I want you guys to take your arm and extend it like you've got somebody here for me. Bo, you do the same thing on this side. So I don't know who this is. And I don't know who this is. But you guys might. And ultimately, that's what this is about, right? It's about us working together to make sure that this process continues as much as we possibly can, right? We want to make sure that everybody feels that they're a part of our family, that they're welcomed into our arms and even larger than that, into the arms of Christ. Thank you, guys. Y'all can go sit down. Thank you. It's on us to reach out and to say, come go with me and I will lead you, I will help you, I will assist you in finding Jesus Christ. Ultimately, we're a family, right? And family has to care too much about family to let them not be a part of what we're doing. And it doesn't matter who walks through those doors, right? It doesn't matter how unique they are, how different they may be, how whatever else. When they become a part of our family, they become a part of what we're doing. They become a part of the church that was built by Jesus Christ, because we do not do this alone. Our goal has to be to take as many people with us as humanly possible, right? And I know that's the goal here at Azalea City Church of Christ, right? It's that as many people as we can hand this off to, in as many different places, in as many different ways that we can have successful handoffs. That's the goal of Mobile Christian School, is to make this handoff as many times. And I hope it's the goal of each and every one of you as a Christian, is that as many people as I can find, as many people as I can take with me, because there's nothing more important than making sure as many people can grab this baton as possible. You know, the illustration this morning is partially incomplete. So as I get ready to kind of close this morning, I want to leave you with a story about a guy that I've come to know even more as I've gotten older. He was born in 1927, July 15th, 1927, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Long way from here. His family grew. He was one of 15 children to his mother and father. His mother and father struggled with alcoholism, so they didn't have much. These two parents and 15 kids lived in a one-bedroom house in Canada. They didn't have enough money for nice blankets, so they used overcoats to sleep at night when it got cold. They didn't have enough money for toothpaste, So they used salt whenever they needed to, which led to a lot of tooth decay in old age. Just did not have the most solid upbringing in any way. When he turned 14, he made the decision that he needed to help his siblings out. So he went to work, and he found a job, and he found another job. And for 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, he's working and trying to help impact his brothers and sisters to the best of his ability. But he gets to the point where he feels like he's got to do something else, or he's going to fall in with what happened to his parents. So he decides to make the decision to move, and not just move, but to move to the United States, completely different country, and join the armed services. Guess where they stationed him? Selma, Alabama. This Canadian was not excited about moving to the South and thought Alabama was as backwards as it could possibly get, was not pumped about any of that. So he gets stationed in Selma, Alabama. And while he's at the base there, he meets another young man who offers him the opportunity basically to come and stay with his family. He still lived with his mom and dad there in the Montgomery-Selma area. So they offered him the opportunity to come and stay. This family was kind of set up, it was more of kind of like a matriarchal situation where the mother was one who had the prominent voice in the family. Her name was Margaret Harrison. The condition for him to come and live with them, which was a better situation for him than what he had, was that he had to come to church on Sundays with them. That was the deal. If you come to church on Sundays, we'll give you a place to stay for free. Well, too good of a deal to pass up. So this man decided to do that. And over the following weeks, over the following months, over the following years, he got to know more of that church community. And it got to the point where he finally made the decision to become a believer in Jesus Christ, to put Jesus Christ on in baptism and become a true member of his church. That impact was so strong on him that the area that he thought once was so backward, the area where he ended up going when he really didn't want to go, he stayed there in that area, ended up taking some college classes at Auburn University. While he was at Auburn, he met a young lady. They fell in love, got married, and had three kids. Three boys. This man, who had an earthly image of a father that we would all agree is not really probably what he wants to be like, raised those three boys inside the church. From that man and that woman, those three boys turned into two preachers and one elder in the church. Even though he didn't have a really great example, he became the type of father himself that wanted to make that happen in his household, that wanted to make that happen in his community. He felt the impact of what it was like to receive the baton. Ultimately, I don't stand here today without that man. That man's name was George Mitchell. George Mitchell's son is Ross Mitchell. That's my father. Without Margaret Harrison taking the next right step, without her keeping her head up, without holding out the baton with faith, without my grandfather saying, you know what, I'm going to empty my hands of the things that have plagued myself and plagued my family for generations. Without being willing to let that go. He doesn't get this. And if he doesn't get this, who knows what else happens. But ultimately, that right there is the type of God that we serve. The type of God who makes and helps that happen. If only we are willing to be instruments of His throughout the process. As long as we remember that nobody runs this race alone, that we look out for those that are around us. I don't know where you are this morning. For many of you, you probably already have this. But maybe you're struggling with holding it to yourself. Maybe it's something like I said before that I've struggled with, where we put it on our pedestal, we put it at home, and we leave it there unless we need it. Maybe it's today that we need to make the decision that I'm going to be active in taking the next right step, that I'm going to be active in holding out this baton with faith. Maybe we've already got it, but at the same time we've tried to hold on to so many other things. Because that's what Satan wants to do, right? He wants to convince us that what the world and the culture tells us, that we can have both. That we can have it all. That we can fall in line with what the world says is good. And maybe if we just hold on, maybe with just a pinky, we can have it all. But what happens when the adversity strikes for the first time? What happens when the first thing goes wrong? What's the first thing to fall? I don't know. Maybe you're there. Maybe we've dropped the baton. Maybe you're on the other side of this. Maybe you have not yet made the decision to be a full-time committed follower of Jesus Christ. And you have people who maybe you're trying to give you that baton. And maybe you're ready to drop, to empty your hands of whatever else you've been holding on to. And you're ready to fully commit to Jesus and put on Him, put His blood on in baptism. Maybe you're just going through that adversity right now, and again, we've dropped the baton, and you're just going through a tough time and you need prayers. I don't know where you are this morning, but regardless of where you are, here's the good news. We don't run this race alone. And I know there are people here at Azalea City Church of Christ that would love to help you, that would love to pray for you and meet your needs, whatever they be. If you want them to be known this morning, I'd encourage you to come right now as we stand and as we sing.